Hi. So I'm just going to pass my phone around and show you pictures of my son, and that'll take up my 14 minutes of microphone time. Again, thanks for coming out tonight. Very happy to be a part of Hemingway's. Many times I've been a reader, but also in the new capacity, it's I'm always thrilled to see all of you folks in this room celebrating the art of poetry, so important to so many of us. So I'm going to start with a Hemingway's poem because I'm here. This is called Hemingway's Cafe, July 10th, 2018. Two quarters on the bar top and the leisurely drumbeat of a stranger's hands, adding counterpoint to a midweek doubleheader. I'm here for the air conditioning and the bartender's disinterest. I'm here because there's nowhere else to go. Too often, I'm overcome by all the junk in my head that I could pass on to my son. Looking at the state of things, though, I suppose that should be the least of my worries. I take a moment every day now to ask whatever the hell is out there to ask, that he isn't too disappointed with me, with this country, with the foolishness that passes for our days and all of the lies we insist on telling ourselves about ourselves. The other night, I dreamt he was here with me at the bar, just a boy and proud to be with his father. He tried to steal sips of my beer, and his mouth was wide with so much loud laughter. My son. What a wonderful dream. There are children right now lost across this country who may never see their fathers and mothers again in this life. They are made to sleep in cages. Some are beaten, some abused, most simply ignored. All are weeping. In my dream, my son is kind. He is generous to me. Not once does he ask, "What did you do to stop this?" I write a lot of poems about bars or take place in bars. Here's another one. This is called My Father Was a Kind of Country Song. They never do turn off the neons in those bars across Lombard. Just leave them buzzing all day long. In there, where the furious smoke of the anonymous glazes every surface, there is that rare jukebox, tarnished as a stack of old pennies, haunting the shadowed corner and the beer spill. If I close my eyes, I can hear it call. The tinny old speakers sounding like washboard scratch. How many hearts entered here broken? And left the same way. This floor has been paced over, this stool worn down to a pencil nub. Wherever you are now, you are walking into this bar. Setting your cigarettes down, you empty one glass after another, the fire in you finding release as you smoke away the day. You like the hard stuff, possum and hag. And keep it going until you've turned your pockets inside out. I see you now, unsteady in the doorway, lighting another and looking at the street, where I'm just a memory, a trace refrain to another old song you used to like the sound of. All right, thanks. Lighten this shit up. Okay. This is an oldie for Jimmy. I wrote this poem not long after Jimmy and I became friends. And we had this conversation many times, as I know a lot of you had with Jimmy. On discussing Charles Bukowski with Jimmy Savitic. This is the poem's in two voices. I'm not going to attempt to do a Jimmy voice. I would just fail. Just sound like Christopher. Because he always called me Christopher. Nobody else calls me Christopher. Christopher. But I'm not going to do that in that voice. You just got to keep banging at the thing. Take me. I'm up at 3 a.m. every day working that hard music. I'd rather be in bed, but what else can you do? You ever hear the one about Book and Ginsburg? Calling the man out. Poor timid Alan. Kaddish was the last one that meant anything, and I guess he was right in his way. What else was there? I put words on the page, and they look like they've got better places to be. Always glancing at the clock, squinting into the sun. A million rooms more interesting. A million mouths prettier. He had an ugly, swollen kisser, but oh, how the language loved him. Okay, this is called Apology to John Dorsey for Missing His Reading. We have a baby. I miss a lot of readings anymore. Let's blame it on being middle-aged. Let's say the languid bodies of the crowd kept me from coming. My own starched skin prickled at the touch of the sun, and my eyes at full squint could not find the way. Let's say I am a liar. Strange to think we spend our time this way, but writing these poems is no different than drinking at the bar. It's in our blood, I suppose. It required generation upon generation of bullshitters to contort my tongue in this precise fashion. Perhaps you suffer from the same genetic malady. Instead, I made my way through the dry brush and potted rebar to the water. When you get down to its level, it's black as mirror backing. Nothing but shadows in there and the garbage floating down from Blahnox. Look all you want, you'll never have to confront your own image here. The muck just won't allow it. On days like these, I prefer the river to our poems. If I had to see myself as I so often do in your words, I don't know how I could return home, go back to my wife, and believe that, yes, everything will work out fine. So I've never liked political poetry. I never thought I would write political poetry. I just thought I would write about bars and bullshit, and that would be it, because I know that shit. But I have this ongoing conversation with Scott, who finds himself in a similar boat, that it's not something that you planned on doing, but you find yourself in this moment that we are existing in right now doing it. Everything you write is political. It doesn't matter what it is you put down on paper. If you are putting words on paper in some sort of intelligent manner, trying to communicate with a human being and be empathetic, you are making a political statement. That's what it's come to. It's called Small Town Romance. You could almost weep for the bankrupt bartender, but watching his hands for a sign of mercy is the very definition of a wasted day. Over the entrance, they've hung a sign that insists you go away. Habit is the law of the land. Pride and prurience are rewarded, just as empathy is openly despised. They'll piss on you sooner than take your hand, translates the Latin on our family crest. Get out the shovel. There's another truth we need to bury. That old couple? They share the window table every day about this time, the blood softly clanking around their gray bodies. He worked a double as often as he could, and she did the same. So went youth and dreams. Lately, we've all gone unlisted in the phone directory. Blank pages, like a thing a ghost would write. Am I okay on time? Am I okay on time? All right. I need to explain this one. Sort of. So when I was 15, 16 years old, I worked on a high school literary magazine, and we were all invited out to a kind of meeting of the tribes called Tapestry in Fox Chapel, which I think was an annual thing. And at the time, Michael Worster was the keynote, the poet in residence. He gave a reading at this. Michael was the first poet I had ever seen in the flesh, aside from recordings of Ginsberg and T.S. Eliot that we listened to in high school. I had never actually seen a living poet before or been at a reading. Michael, you were my first. It was a good start. You were very kind, very gentle. At the reading, Michael, at one point, I don't even remember how this came about, what poem he read that inspired it, or if it just came out of the blue, said, "Everyone should write a poem about a steel mill." And that stuck with me for 30 years. and it's a reflection of me, like, it's a very pure moment, but I, like, nagged it to death in my head. Like, why should everybody write a poem about a steel mill? I never wrote a poem about a steel mill. Why was I not writing poems about steel mills? So this comes up every now and then in my head, and I think about it a lot. But here's the poem. 30 years overdue. I hope you don't charge interest. 'Cause I'm a poor poet, man. I don't have money. But here's what I was thinking a while back. This is called "The Poem I Promised Michael Worster Many Years Ago." Michael Worster once said, "Everyone should write a poem about a steel mill." But the mills were relics even when I was a boy. The red-hot pomp of this town gone cool and quiet long before my first kiss. Now that the sun is a clean disk observing the motion of the city, clear and ascendant above the grit and haze, why memorialize the mills? I write mostly of bars and sometimes of the rivers. Maybe there's no magic left in the mills. The infernal roar, the colossal burn that made a dull knife of the air. The only connection I felt to the mills was to the children of a generation of flayed men on unemployment. The storefronts boarded, the city emptied, the homes of friends blackened by despair and made dangerous by depression, alcoholism, and the all-present threat of irrevocable violence. Since then, I've climbed the rusted hulk of Cary Furnace, imagined the deafening blaze, and took note of each weed now sprouted where the heavy shod feet of lonely men pressed a signature of sorts into the poison ground. So here, Michael, after too many humid years, is the poem promised, your sincere exhortation. Here is more air, incapacitated with ash. More water you'd be a fool to drink. Here is a poem to melt the ground on which you stand. All right, this is my last poem. Thank you for listening. Thanks for coming out. Really appreciate it. This is called "This Vicious Year." Perhaps when we are gone, we will enter into the beautiful history, as O'Hara called it. But I fear it's vastly more likely our current civic disgraces will forever keep the door barred. All the coins I hoard that never find the palm of an outstretched hand. Every daub of color so indistinct and ill-defined the museum goer never notices. Every clear sky day you can't be bothered to look up. It all goes on the cosmic ledger. I may be lousy at math, but even I can see how the tally goes against us. But here in this darkness, in anonymity, I am comforted. This jukebox here, brimful with throbbing, inconsolable hearts, is a badge on the breast of our better graces. Patsy Cline and Ronnie Van Zant may have punctuated their lives in the breakage of gravity, but nightly we listen as they rise and take the heaviness of the day with them. Billie Holiday plants a bloody, endless forest and demands we climb our way out. Up there, we lose a torrential rain of tears. But who's to say the resultant flood isn't cleansing? And Elvis, my God, Elvis. The common belief is this universe is cold and it's empty. And the speck of dust is the only game in town. And what have we done with this mathematically improbable honor? What will you do with the next hour, the next day? Here, in this bar, on such an ugly night in this vicious year, whose will be the next aching voice? The last absolutely precious thing we can all agree on. Thanks.